Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to ScaryCast live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. I hope everyone's having a great day. We've got a superb show lined up. We have one of our very special guests, which contributes once a month, and it's going to be a lot of fun to talk with John LeMay. But first, I want to introduce our co-hosts from West Hollywood, California, the one and only Devin Tate. How are you tonight, Devin?
I'm doing really good, John. Happy to be here with you all.
We're glad you're here with us, too. That's great. And the man from Canada with COVID, he's got COVID finally, Mark Johnston. How are you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? Yeah, I got COVID. I'm doing okay, though. Hopefully my voice isn't so raspy on the phone here, and I really want to hear about Skinwalkers. It's something that, to be honest, I don't know too much about. I've watched that show, Skinwalker Ranch, but other than that, and John LeMay always brings good things to the table, so yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight's show.
Well, that's great, and we got Dr. Trey Donaway, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast. He will be with us momentarily, and Robin McCray, the Queen of ScaryCast, is leaving on a jet plane. She is leaving Dallas and headed to Columbia, South Carolina after a week-long absence, so that we will have her back, and it'll be great to have her back here in the Carolinas with us, and she'll have a lot to tell us because we're going to have her week after next to talk a little bit about the Nebraska Bigfoot Conference. So it was just, I know she said it was an incredible experience. So now the one and only, one of our absolute favorite guests and a good friend of ScaryCast, the one and only John LeMay. How are you doing tonight, John?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm fighting off a little bit of the sleepiness, but see if I pull through. It's just one of those days.
I understand. I'm kind of doing the same thing, but I get excited when it's time for ScaryCast. At 9 p.m., I just get excited and my blood starts pumping because we got a lot of great things to talk about. Now, when
you
and I discussed
again.
Pardon?
Did you come alive again?
That's right. And what you and I discussed on Sunday is that you're going to talk a little bit more from your brand new book, and you're going to talk about werewolves and skinwalkers. Is that correct?
Yeah, I'm just always astounded whenever I come on here to talk about that new book. I've been trying to talk about the whole thing now for like three shows, and the first one, we only made it through vampires, and then the second one, we only made it through mummies, so I figured we could finally talk about the werewolves and the skinwalkers of the Wild West. Yeah, so the book is called Cowboys and Monsters, Vampires, Mummies, and Werewolves of the Wild West, and it's all comprised of real newspaper articles that really were published during the pioneer period that purport to tell of encounters with vampires and things like that. So kind of like my books about aliens and dinosaurs, but just more along the lines of the old universal monsters in this case.
Right. Well, that does sound exciting. Everybody needs, now, is it available now on Amazon?
Yeah, it's available in print, on Kindle, everything, and it's been out, I think, since March or so. I can't remember now, March or April, something like that.
Okay, great. Well, we're glad. I got to order me a copy. I just haven't had a chance. It was so busy going out to Los Angeles with what all I got to do out there for Unexplained, starring William Shatner, and then the very next weekend, I had the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, and that just, between those two weekends, that about did me in, and I'm just so glad that I'm beginning to recover from it, and because it was a lot of fun, but it was a lot of work. You know, traveling is not the world's easiest thing, is it, John?
No, I barely travel, so you got a leg up on me.
Well, I mean, it's an endurance test, I think, to see if you can make it out alive and get to your destination on time. So anyway, but it was a lot of fun going out there to Los Angeles.
Well, and the airlines get more challenging, right? The airlines get more challenging every decade. It used to just be the pat-downs from TSA. Now it's masks and stuff like that, and stewardess that come by and hit you with a ruler when you take your mask off, and it's pretty intense.
Yeah, They really do. It's just kind of crazy. But anyway, so I'm going to let you get the ball rolling. Why don't we start by talking about werewolves, and then we will migrate to skinwalkers. Does that sound okay?
Yeah. So with the werewolves in the Old West, really, I shouldn't say werewolves of the Old West. Most of the werewolves, I think, were in areas that had a lot of French settlers. So like in French Canada, you know, they would bring with them the legends of the werewolves, I noticed. And also in the French quarters of the South is where they tended to have more werewolf legends back then. Kind of like same with New Orleans had vampire legends. But now the state that has the most surprising amount of werewolf stories is Kentucky. They have a couple. And I remember the first one, even that one kind of has like a Native American touch to it, even though it was told by the Anglos. So the first one goes that there was this fur trapper named, gosh, I think his name was literally Nils Will. That's right. You heard it right. Nils Will. Let me make sure that's right. Yeah, Nils Wills, he was in the Red River Gorge area of Kentucky. And he was out hunting one day. He had befriended the Cherokee people, and he had injured himself really bad during this hunt. And I guess he had fallen from a cliff, and he fell far enough that it just about killed him. And so the Cherokee drug him back to their tribal medicine man, and they performed something on him called the wolf gift, which gave him the power to turn into a werewolf. So after that, Nils Wills, he, instead of being grateful, he was mad about it because he felt like he'd been cursed with, you know, a devilish affliction. And so in his werewolf form, he went and started hunting down the different Cherokee. So, you know, it sounds quite a bit like a folktale, and that one probably is. But it's, you know, it's interesting. I think it hails from about 1810 or so. But what's strange, it was still today in the Red River Gorge area, they still have werewolf sightings, though. So, you know, maybe there is some truth to it. And then the other interesting one from Kentucky comes from a spot known as the Land Between Lakes. And the land, in this case, is the Land Between... Oh, have you heard of that one?
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, that's terrifying up there. And I've had some people that I know who have gone up there in search of Dogman, which I don't know about that. I think that's a little bit on the scary side, is to go hunt Dogman up in Land Between the Lakes. I mean, you know, you might really find one, and the Dogman might not be happy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I know about it, and then I would love to hear your stories, too. But yeah, for people that don't know, when you say the Land Between Lakes, that's the land between Lake Barkley and Kentucky Lake. And it goes back again to the European settlers that moved to the region. And I guess there was this strange family that lived out in the woods. None of them spoke English. And the locals would whisper that they'd all go mad every night after nightfall. And they claimed that they were a whole family of werewolves. And there's a different story about a Chickasaw shaman who could shapeshift into a wolf. And he was accused by his fellow tribesmen of using his powers for evil and cast out into the wilderness. Then the tribe started to hunt him down. And they even teamed up with the Anglo settlers to see if they could kill him. And I guess they went out into the wild, and they did manage to shoot the werewolf. And it said in his dying moments, he cursed all the men who had participated in hunting him down and vowed to return to torment them. So I guess that's why that portion of the woods over there is haunted. And it's just one of many, many stories about werewolves in the Land Between Lakes regions. And one of them goes that in the 1980s, supposedly they found like a family murdered in their camper. And like some of the people were even like found strung up in trees and stuff. But again, that's one of those things
correct.
You can't prove. It's just one of those, yeah.
Well, no, I think that story has a lot of credence to it, because I've heard that from several sources, and it's really terrifying. They just found those folks strung up, torn up. I mean, it was just a mess. I mean, better be careful about land between the lakes now. That's not exactly the best place to be looking around and poking around for Bigfoot or for Dogman. I mean, it's just not. I don't want to mess around with areas like that. I mean, you can get hurt very badly. So that's what I do. I do know that story seems to have a lot going for it. So now, did you include that in your book?
I did. I try to stick to the older stuff, but just as like a little aside, sometimes I'll mention the newer stuff, just to prove that, these things are still talked about in those regions.
Right, and I mean, it's just a mess. And by the way, the Surgeon General of Scarycast is with us tonight, Dr. Trey Dunaway. How are you doing, Trey?
Good, John. I'm sorry I missed the beginning. I was driving back home.
Well, that's okay. We're glad you're with us. And we got our buddy John LeMay, and he's talking about werewolves and the skinwalkers. And those are two pretty creepy.
John LeMay, I have a question for you. The family that was attacked, what kind of injuries did they sustain?
I think that's a question maybe for other John. I think he's more up on that one than I am.
They were ripped, Trey. They were ripped to shreds.
Bite marks, like animal ripped to shreds, or
yeah. Animal
or ripped to shreds.
Well, kind of like as if a very mad bear got to them.
Oh,
but they were
okay.
Strung up. But they were strung up in trees, and that's very unusual for something like that to happen. At least I think so, and that's not only a legend, but I think it's a true story. And the government does their best to keep people out of that area because it's just too dangerous. And that's the last that I heard. Our buddy Matt Delph has been up there, and he said he didn't find anything. And I'm glad he didn't, to be honest with you. I'm glad he came back safe and sound, because that just doesn't sound like a very wholesome place to be hanging out by yourself with a lone shotgun. It really doesn't. So, I don't know. I get scared in dark woods at night. John LeMay, do you get scared in dark woods at night? I know.
I don't even go out into the dark woods at night, so.
Good.
Well, that's interesting. You talked about the government kind of cordoning off that area, because that's a whole other can of worms we could open with 411, the missing people series. It's mostly about people that go missing on government land and national parks and things like that, and just the incredibly high volume that disappear in those areas in particular. So that's interesting. I bet Mark knows something about 411.
Mark, do you?
Do I know something about 411? Sorry, I didn't quite understand.
Yeah. The fact that there are a lot of reports. And John, what's the fellow's name that has written those books?
But he does books and videos. Like, they're on Amazon Prime sometimes for free. It's just like the 411 series. It's just all about missing persons in the national parks.
Oh, cool. Well, I've heard about that. I've heard about missing people in national parks going on for a long time, and it seems to be a regular occurrence, that's for sure.
I'm going to have a crowd when I go out in the woods. I'm going to have a crowd. I'm not going to mess around with that. I mean, I guess you can say I'm afraid, but I want to come back alive. But I know Matt Delph was out there, and in fact, what we need to do is, John, maybe the next time you're on, we need to get Matt Delph, and he could tell us his story about being in the land between the lakes. Would you like for me to do that?
I'd love that.
Yeah. Matt's a good friend of ours, and so I'm sure he would like that, and we'll do that. So about how many werewolf stories do you have in this book?
So as I was putting it together, I found enough to do an entire other book of cowboys and werewolf stories, and I'm probably going to call it Cowboys and Dogmen, because I just think that's a cool title. So there's a lot of them I didn't publish in this one to just save for later. The only other real traditional werewolf story I've got in this book is funny because it ties into the movie The Wolfman. I'm sure we all remember the main character's name is Larry Talbot. Larry Talbot,
mm-hmm.
That was Lon Chaney Jr.'s, his character was Larry Talbot. Well, this is the real werewolf woman of Talbot County, Georgia. And I'm kind of suspicious of it. I mean, Talbot County was named back in like 1825 or 1840 or something, you know, well before the movie of the 1940s. But I can't help but wonder if somebody made up this werewolf story when they saw the name Talbot County. You know, they're like, well, that's the name of the Wolfman, so let's just, you know, make up a werewolf story for Talbot County. But the story is that there was this girl who, she wouldn't get hairy. She wouldn't turn into like a hairy wolf per se, but at night she would suffer psychosis in which she would wander out and she would attack like sheep and farm animals out in the country. And she kind of believed that she was a werewolf. And supposedly one night while she was out, you know, perusing in the darkness, some farmers actually did shoot her and wound her in one variation of the story. And it's kind of like the Wolfman movie, because in the story, this girl's mother kind of follows her out into the forest, and she, you know, she saves her, I think, from getting shot at the last minute or something. So it does remind me a lot of the Wolfman movie where, you know, Larry Talbot's father follows him out into the woods, only in that case, you know, he has to kill the Wolfman. And in this story, you know, I think she lives. But people can't really prove whether or not this girl was real or not, but the werewolf girl of Talbot County, it's fairly well known in terms of real werewolf stories of the Americas.
Okay, now, did you say about when this occurred?
I can't believe I actually remember this, but it was about 1840. I'm shocked that I can remember the date this time.
Okay, so quite a while back.
Yeah.
About 180 years ago, but that's interesting. I mean, now because I run the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, where is Talbot County in general?
I think that's a job for Trey. He'll Google that and figure it out, because I don't remember.
Talbot County,
offhand.
What state?
Georgia.
1840s, yeah. Oh, state. I thought you said date. Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder where that is. I wonder how close it is to Clayton. Georgia's a big state, I'm going to tell you that. There's lots of crazy stuff that goes on there, and especially up there in Rabun County, which is pretty much nuts.
I don't understand something. Is there like some connection with then like Skinwalker and the Wolfman that you're talking about? Is it like something to do with like an animalistic kind of humanoid?
So not. I mean, in these cases, the werewolves are pretty different from the Skinwalkers, and I'd be happy to just transition to Skinwalkers now, because they're more what I've been researching recently and stuff. So. They're not really like werewolves, because they can be anything they want. And, you know, it's not like the traditional werewolf story where you get bitten and you turn into a wolf and all that. In their case, they're always Native American witches, predominantly Navajo. I don't think there are skinwalkers outside of the Navajo Nation. And how they induce their transformation is whatever animal they want to turn into, they just wear that pelt, and then I guess somehow the pelt comes alive or something, and that's how they turn into, sometimes, you know, some people think they turn into like a full animal, like just a normal wolf, but most people who claim to see skinwalkers usually describe them as being kind of like half human, half animal. So again, though, but they can wear the pair of a belt, and
so like shapeshifters.
They can wear the pelt of a bear. Yeah. And supposedly they can turn into other people. They're a lot more interesting than werewolves. I mean, if you're using them in fiction or something, there's a lot more to play with because they just, there's so much to them. They use weapons. They make these little arrows out of bones, and then they dip the arrows in corpse powder and, like, shoot them into people, and they'll get sick. And it's interesting. I mean, probably to y'all where you live, you know, back east, that sounds strange, but, like, I know people. I'm not talking this up for the show. I really do know people today, you know, because I live in the Southwest, and they don't like to talk about skinwalkers. That makes them uncomfortable because they do wholeheartedly believe that they're real, and they don't like to – a lot of people don't like to say the name out loud because it's just taboo. So it's exactly like the old, you know, like 1931 Dracula movie where the people at the inn at the beginning of the movie, you know, you can't even say the word Dracula around them, and the old lady puts the cross around Harker's neck. It's actually like that around here with skinwalkers in certain places. Like, it sounds like a movie cliche, but...
I've had the same experience before when I've been trying to talk to my native friends in my part of Canada where I had a Bigfoot experience. I was asking them questions, and I knew that they knew, but they were kind of afraid to say. I had the same similar kind of reaction because it's something that's in their culture and was taught to them that they're there, but they were really hush-hush about talking about it.
Right. John, I don't know if I've told you this story or not, but it's a little bit telling, and it's a very interesting story. I used to use a hosting company that was located in Utah, and so I called up late one night. I was trying to get something done on my server, and the guy that I was talking to said, "Wow, you've got a lot of paranormal domain names on your server." I said, "Well, yeah, I do. I really enjoy it, and I deal with it and everything." He said, "My family and I own the land next to Skinwalker Ranch, and we can't sell it. Nobody will put an offer on it." I said, "Well, tell me a little bit about it." He said, it's really scary, and I don't like to talk about it, because when I do talk about it, bad luck seems to happen to me." And then he sent me, now this is very interesting, he sent me about a 2,000-word handwritten article about their property and about the skinwalkers. And that was about 6 years ago, and I looked back, and that article has disappeared from Google, from my Gmail. I don't know why, but I researched this fella, and he is an elder in the Mormon church in St. Louis at the main church. And I don't think that he was lying when he said, "I don't like to talk about this." And so then I sent him an email, another couple of years afterwards. I said, "I'd like for you to be on my podcast, Scarycast." He said, "Absolutely not. Just the more I talk about it, the more I get ingrained in this thing, the stranger things happen to me." So, yes, they not only believe it, but they have had experiences with it. So, I mean, it's like, what do you say? I said, "Well, okay." I mean, he said, just check with me later. But I'm not sure that I ever want to talk about Skinwalker Ranch. And now, who all in this group has seen the television series about Skinwalker Ranch? I know I haven't, and I frankly don't want to, because I've heard enough experiences that I know that that's not necessarily the best thing to be talking about. So has anybody here on the show ever seen that?
I saw the first few episodes. It was okay. It's one of those types of shows that they always seem to be trying to find something and never really, they don't find anything conclusive, obviously. It's like, but they do talk about a lot of things that's interesting, in that portals open up and UFO experiences, and I think there's cattle mutilations in the area, things like that.
Well, it's certainly not the world's easiest thing to talk about. And, you know, so John, what kinds of stories do you have on skinwalkers in your book?
Well, before we move on, I just want to put forth the suggestion. You need to talk to your friend again and see if Elon Musk will buy it. because he buys a lot of stuff now. And well, I say that because Skinwalker Ranch, you know, got sold to some sort of famous billionaire. Let me find his name, because that was interesting. Skinwalker Ranch, it got sold to, who was it? I've got it right here close. Gosh, or I thought I did. Somebody famous, though, who owns, like, a big research institute. Okay. So, Robert Bigelow, the owner of the National Institute for Discovery Science, he bought it in 1996 just to study it, and he studied it for about 10 years. So that's interesting. I think there's absolutely something to Skinwalker Ranch. And I also think, you know, Amazon Prime's got this new show out called Outer Range, which is kind of about a paranormal ranch. And I really think that's probably inspired by the Skinwalker Ranch. So it's, I mean, it's getting pretty prevalent. You know, I mean, I think a lot more people are finding out about it. And what interests me about that ranch, though, is it runs the gamut of everything weird that you can imagine. Because even though it's called Skinwalker Ranch, what it has more than anything else are UFO sightings. It also has cryptid sightings. There's been a dinosaur sighting on it. Pretty sure there's been Sasquatch sightings. And then there's the Skinwalkers. Actually, the Skinwalkers are kind of a small part of it, in my opinion, because mostly it's UFOs and cryptids. And in terms of the Skinwalkers, what they saw were these big, giant wolves, kind of like the dire wolves from the prehistoric past or from Game of Thrones, if you watch that. The owners of the ranch in the mid-90s would see these big, huge, huge wolves that were unnaturally large, in addition to the UFOs and other things and orbs of light. So it's very strange. And they do have reports of the Skinwalker Ranch, not really going back into the Old West, but into the early 1900s. They also have reports of those orbs of light they would see in the air and just talk of, like, strange creatures on the ranch. Now, an interesting connection I draw between the orbs of light and the Skinwalkers is this is another thing kind of native to the Southwest. The Spanish peoples and the Native Americans claimed that witches would turn into fireballs. They said that they would either ride fireballs or turn into fireballs. So I think it's interesting that they see the glowing orbs of light over the Skinwalker Ranch, you know, which some people call ghost lights, maybe even kind of like the Marfa lights. So there is an association between. Yeah.
Yeah. Is this, I mean, I've never seen the Marfa lights, and I want to get out there this summer and see them. I mean, can you describe what the Marfa lights look like? Are they circular, orb-shaped, or what?
Yes, from what I understand, I've never seen them in the flesh, but from what I understand, that's, yeah, they're circular orbs. And what's funny is you can come up with three different paranormal explanations for what they are. You know, the most obvious one everybody, you know, puts out there is that they're just UFOs, you know. That's the easiest one. We could go with what I was just talking about, that they're ghost lights or, like, spirit lights or the witches riding the fireballs. But there's another one that's really, really out there and interesting, and it's going to take you by surprise, but some people do believe this. It's that pterodactyls are actually bioluminescent. And, you know, I mean, nobody knows that because they're extinct, so how would a paleontologist know that? But there's a few cryptozoologists that actually think that the Marfa lights could be remnant little pterodactyls because they had smaller varieties that are actually bioluminescent and they only come out at night. Or, I mean, it could be any weird bioluminescent animal, I guess. And that's the third explanation in terms of what the Marfa lights might be.
Okay, but I know one thing. They have a visitor center out there, and people come there at all hours of the night to look at the Marfa lights, correct?
Yeah, and I need to go, too. I mean, if it works out, maybe I'll try to go when you go, but we'll see. I mean, I know we're going to meet for lunch somewhere midway, but maybe I
right,
can manage to see the lights, too.
Ought to meet in Marfa, because, to be honest with you, I'd like for you to come up to Aurora, because the local newspaper up there said they would take me and whoever I brought to see some very interesting things about the Aurora crash. It's like they know some, they've got some scoop that nobody else does.
Mm-hmm.
And I, for one, would like to know what went on up there. That is a, that is quite an anomaly. It's the Aurora crash. We did a special podcast. It was actually very popular. We had over 100 people listen to that podcast. And it's just amazing what all goes on in Texas. But yeah, let's, we need to start trying to plan that for like August, and you can just meet us in Marfa, and then we can ride up to Aurora, because it just, it's crazy out there. And I can't wait to see some scoop. John, I don't know about you, but I love it when I get scoop from people that know, don't you?
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see what we can do. And about how far is Marfa from you? I think it's like 6 hours. Is that right?
Yeah, I can't remember. I need to tally that again.
Yeah, and then it's like 6 hours further to Aurora, and maybe we just head up there, and I don't know, and then I'll head down to Houston and catch a plane. I'll be leaving on a jet plane for sure, kind of like Robin is right now. Now, that sounds extremely interesting, and I'd love to try to do that. So now, getting back to the Skinwalker question, I have heard that they have seen wolves transform into humans, and humans transform into wolves. That, I mean, I think it's a big old shape-shifting thing. I know that, as crazy as this sounds, I live in an apartment complex, and I was standing there talking to Robin McRae on the phone, and I saw about a 25-year-old man walk directly through a door. And I've never seen anything like that. Don't know what to say. And I was standing there talking to Robin. I said, my God, this guy just walked through the door. She said, that's shapeshifter. I mean, you know, I see a lot of crazy things. So
yeah, I was wishing Robin would be on tonight, because, I mean, you already just kind of proved she knows, you know, stuff about all of that.
Well, she does. And I'm sorry that she is in an airplane flying back from Hastings, Nebraska, or whatever. I mean, she had a great time out there, but it's a shame she's not on here, because she does have some pretty detailed knowledge about this, just because she has studied it a lot. And I don't know what to tell people. I mean, these legends seem to be fairly substantiated. Don't you think, John?
Yeah, the fact that people really don't want to talk about them is kind of a testament possibly to their truth. Because, I mean, the reason why not much is known about skinwalkers is because the Navajo people will not talk about them. So where the typical skinwalker story today is that you'll be driving, you know, late at night along a road somewhere around the New Mexico-Arizona border where the Navajo reservations are, and that you'll see like a half man, half wolf, like running at the speed of your car and kind of looking at you. And the stories are really, really creepy. But there's a lot of those, and they became more prevalent probably in the 90s. You won't find a whole lot of them from the Old West. I was only able to find one good skinwalker story from the Old West, and it doesn't really have any shape-shifting, you know, wolf people in it. But it is a real historical incident that happened in the summer of 1878. The Navajo had just endured the horrendous long walk, which occurred all the way back in the 1860s. They were forced to leave Arizona to come to Fort Sumner, which is, you know, where our friend Billy the Kid got shot and killed. But there used to be a Native American reservation there. And it wasn't a very good one. It was a really ill-equipped place for them to send just these thousands and thousands of people to try and survive. And so it was called Bosque Redondo. It was considered a monumental failure, and all of the Navajo were sent back to Arizona in 1868. But the long walk, you know, because it was literally, you know, they weren't allowed really to ride horses. They were forced to walk. That's why they call it the Long Walk. That Long Walk had killed a lot of their people. It had taken a huge toll on them. So when they finally got back home, you know, to where the land where they originated, they really weren't in very good shape. They had really bad luck with their livestock and just their elderly, and people would die mysterious deaths, and the livestock would die mysteriously, and they would always blame it on witches and the skinwalkers. And it basically turned into the Salem witch trials, only in the Southwest. And the Navajo, you know, started accusing different tribe members that they didn't like of being skinwalkers. And it snowballed because the tribe's people kind of figured out that all I have to do to get rid of my enemy is accuse them of being a skinwalker. So they would. So, I mean, I would say a few of the people that were executed, it was called the Navajo Witch Purge. I would say a few of them probably were actual witches, but most of them, the bulk, were probably people that just got accused because somebody didn't like them for petty reasons, you know. But I believe about 40 people or more, 40 Navajos, were executed under the accusation of being a skinwalker. But, you know, there were no reports of, anyone seeing somebody turn into a wolf or a coyote or anything exciting like that. It was just pretty much simple finger pointing that, they suspected so-and-so of being a witch, and so they killed them. And eventually the U.S. Army had to step in and, put a stop to it. And it's a pretty touchy subject because I wrote an article about it for my local newspaper, and they actually wouldn't publish it, which shocked me because they felt like it was still too sensitive, you know, over, 140-something years later.
Really? Do you have a copy of that article you could share?
Well, the article is really just a condensed chapter from my Cowboys and Monsters book because, I can print everything I want when I'm the editor. So it's in the book, and it's unabridged because this was like an abridged article for the paper. But, yeah, so it's in Cowboys and Monsters, it's a fairly big chapter about the skinwalkers.
Okay. And this is the new book, correct?
Yeah, Cowboys and Monsters. And it's also got the very final chapter is about the Skinwalker Ranch and all of the oldest stories I could dig up from Skinwalker Ranch. But what Mark and I were talking about on the side a few days ago, we were just talking about the interesting ways in which one allegedly kills a skinwalker. Because it's just like with the werewolf, you know, you have to do certain things to kill them or otherwise they're basically immortal. Or maybe not immortal, but they'll live for hundreds of years allegedly and, you know, normal bullets and knives won't work on them. And so one of the stranger ways to kill a skinwalker is, this sounds like more of a folktale, but you have to find out what their given birth name was. And if you figure out what their given birth name was and you speak it to them and out their true identity, it either kills them or renders them powerless or something like that, which is interesting. And what's even more interesting, they never ever used this in any of the werewolf movies here in the U.S., like The Wolfman or Curse of the Werewolf, but the same is actually true, supposedly, of werewolves in the really old European lore sometimes. If you could figure out the werewolf's name and utter it aloud, it would, you know, kind of render it powerless or under your control or something like that. So I find it
kind of
very
like
interesting.
Kind of like the ruffled silk skin of shapeshifters.
Oh, well, enlighten me a little bit because I vaguely know who Rumpelstiltskin is, but
he was like a troll
or away,
somebody,
Chris, yeah.
And he did something bad, and he was going to steal a kid or something, unless the mother could guess his name, and when they finally guessed Rumpelstiltskin, because, you know, that's what I'd have guessed if I was trying to guess somebody's name right off the bat. Then the hex was removed and everything. Everyone lived happily there ever after, except for Rumpelstiltskin, of course, who was mortified, and he had to go slinking off. You don't remember
Thank you, because I forgot that. I totally forgot that story.
Yeah,
I just remember
the name. Yeah, Rumpelstiltskin. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what gets me, though, is commonalities and different mythologies, like of different cultures that weren't really connected, and they all have kind
of
the same thing.
Well, you've
got
to figure there's going to be an overlap. Yeah, there's going to be an overlap with different cultures and stuff. If it's interesting in one area, it's probably going to be interesting in another area, too. So.
You're talking about fairy tales there. You're talking about fairy tales and skinwalkers. It seems like even going back to like Shakespearean things with Puck and things, there's kind of like animalistic kind of characters and, you know, behind the scenes of humanity outside our perception. Potentially there's
Brothers Grimm probably would have enjoyed this discussion.
Yeah, I think they're all on the same page there because it was all about cryptids and things like that.
Yep, yep.
The other way,
there's only, again, there's very little known about skinwalkers because the Navajo just won't talk about them. The other way that you allegedly kill them is with something that was dipped in white ash, and that can be a bullet, it can be a knife, whatever. But where the mystery comes in for most people, and this is what Mark and I were talking about, is there's two different arguments. Some people, for some reason, think it's the variety of tree, the white ash. Like maybe you jam your knife into the bark of the white ash and get the sap on it or something. But most people tend more to lean that white ash refers to like burnt ashes that are actually white. And you would dip the knife or the bullet in those, and that would make your weapon more deadly to the skinwalker, kind of like a silver bullet was deadly to a werewolf. So I was just curious if anyone's ever figured out, you know, I mean, are they talking about white ashes or the white ash tree? So I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was just trying to figure out if ashes were used in any types of darts or anything like that in history. I can't really find anything about that.
Oh, good thought. Yeah, but that's, like I said, there's just not much known about skinwalkers. There's just very little because nobody wants to talk about them.
So what's the connection with the Skinwalker Ranch then? You're saying that they don't really, there are those accounts at this place, but usually it's UFOs and other types of cryptids that are there?
Oh, yeah, so going way, way back to the... So there was also another tribe in the area, the Ute tribe and then the Navajos. And for a while, the Utes and the Navajos were both allies and friends. And eventually the Utes turned on the Navajos and started kidnapping them and making slaves out of them. And when they did that, things went south. And the rumor is that the Navajos cursed the land that Skinwalker Ranch is on because it belonged to the Utes. And they put like a skinwalker curse on it, and they claim that there's like a head skinwalker that lives in Dark Canyon, Utah, and like that's where the head skinwalker lives. It's all very interesting, but there's just not a lot to back it up in terms of the, you know, the oral testimony. But there's a lot of interesting stories. There's weird petroglyphs on the Skinwalker Ranch. They've got weird Masonic symbols carved in certain spots, and they think that was attributed to a group of Masonic buffalo soldiers. Believe it or not, there was actually a Masonic chapter of buffalo soldiers that lived in that area, and they think maybe they did it. There's a spot near Skinwalker Ranch called Bottle Hollow, which is like an artificial lake. And even though an artificial lake should not have like a prehistoric cryptid type monster, it has a giant snake monster living in it that a lot of people claim to see. So like I said, just you can find, again, aliens, dinosaurs, werewolves, the whole gamut is over there at Skinwalker Ranch for whatever reason. And I think some of the Native Americans who live around there, because they – they had a Native American ranch hand, and he believed that Skinwalker Ranch was like a gateway between the different dimensions, and that you could accidentally slip through it if you weren't careful.
That's interesting. You mentioned the lake monsters, and that's another one we're talking about, cross-cultural things like lake monsters, obviously Loch Ness, and where I lived in Lake, right on Lake Okanagan, there was the Ogopogo, and there's other places, I think Lake Champlain, there's one. So that seems to be a common occurrence. It's not just like an isolated incident as well, and something that has a historical basis and something that's people claim to see to this day as well.
See, now, Mark, I wish that you would have seen Ogopogo. I know you've seen, I think you allegedly said you'd seen, maybe seen a Sasquatch, but I'm more interested in the lake monsters.
Me too. I was kept an eye out when I was on the beach there. I was like, I want to capture that lake. I want to see it. But, people think it might be these eels. There's like a lot of caves there. So it might just be like a kind of eel that only comes out once in a while. Just like there's like deep water ore fish and things that only come up like once in a while. So I don't know. That's what I think it is, if there is something real. Or because there's a lot of UFO in this activity in this lake as well, that they actually come in and people, I think, filmed it too, come in and out of that lake. That maybe there's like this kind of interdimensional thing where maybe UFOs drop off a interdimensional lake monster once in a while and pick them back up. I don't know. That's just my theory.
Yeah.
There's a really cool book called The Goblin Universe by some guy named Holiday. I can't remember his first name, but it's about paranormal activity at Loch Ness other than the monster. And it's really cool. And it talks about a priest trying to perform an exorcism on Loch Ness. And it's a totally different wild book on the Loch Ness Monster. And like I said, I'm pretty sure it's either called The Goblin Universe or it's called the Great Orm of Loch Ness, because you know how they called dragons worms and orms and all that. It's the Orm of Loch Ness. It's a really interesting book.
That's cool.
I would say there's lots of interesting things. Well, what nobody noticed is I had to try back 5 times to get logged back in. Something kept me.
We noticed you're very quiet.
Something kept me from being part of a conversation for about 5 minutes, and I had to keep trying back. And I don't know if it was Skinwalker or what, but it was a little creepy. I've never had that experience.
Yeah, we were talking about Skinwalker Ranch again. That's exactly what we were talking about.
Yeah. Anyway, so maybe that lets.
But John,
you know
you're saying about.
Navajo.
Sorry.
Do what?
I wanted to ask him about something he was talking about, Skinwalker Ranch, which is like this isolated lake, you're saying, that was there?
Yeah, like Bottlecap Lake, Bottleneck Lake. I can look that up real quick. It's something with Bottle Cap in the name.
I wonder if there's any underground connections, because like under the surface, especially during, the ground, especially under like the Continental Divide, there's like these vast underground lakes and rivers and things, and I wonder if there's something going on potentially there.
Okay, so I exaggerated when I called it a lake. So apparently it's just a ravine. They used to toss their bottle caps in there after the soldiers had been drinking, so it's a ravine called Bottle Hollow, and it was filled with water later on, and they see this snake monster that lives in it.
Interesting.
They even say that they call it a spectral water serpent, and they even allege that it's killed a few people.
Now, where is this, John?
It's near the Skinwalker Ranch, just in that, not on it, but just in that same territory on the Ute reservations, or where the Ute reservations used to be, maybe, but.
Oh, my goodness. It just gets weirder and weirder out there, doesn't it?
Yep.
I think we'll stop at Marfa and Aurora, and we're not going to go up to Skinwalker Ranch, I'll tell you that. I don't think that's a very wholesome place to go to, so We'll let all the researchers do all the research that they want to do, but I don't want to mess around with Skinwalker Ranch. I just don't. And after I had my experience seeing a shapeshifter, and I know what I saw. I mean, I just can't explain what it was like seeing a human being walk through a door. And I saw the guy a couple other times, and I stayed away from it. I mean, I did. I just didn't want anything to do with him. There's enough creepy stuff out there. Now, Devin, we haven't heard from you. Have you got any questions or comments?
I'm just still thinking about the bioluminescent pterodactyls. That really interested me. It made me think because there's where I grew up in Kansas, there was a lot of fireflies or lightning bugs, whatever, you know, people call them. But I remember one time we went to like this river, like in a valley at the bottom of a valley, and there was so many of them that it was really otherworldly. And then apparently out here in California, there's some sort of algae that glows blue, so it makes the waves blue. I haven't been at the right place at the right time to see them yet, but it's just interesting how many actual bioluminescent, you know, beings exist that maybe we don't know about all of them.
Well, I'm thinking about that bioluminescent pterodactyl too. I mean, if you're bioluminescent, it could be all sorts of things. So they must have had a pretty good look at it if it was a pterodactyl, because they're fairly, you know, pretty obvious what a pterodactyl looks like. But if you really want to know if they're a pterodactyl, you wait until they go to the bathroom.
Oh, why is that?
Oh, no.
Why is that? That's because if you don't hear anything, it's a pterodactyl because it's a silent P.
Oh.
Okay. That's how you confirm
you made
it's
that
a
one
pterodactyl.
Up.
Yeah.
Is that actually yours? Did you make that up?
No, I didn't make that up. It's an old pterodactyl joke. I can just, you know, that's an old pterodactyl. You've never heard the pterodactyl joke with the silent P?
No.
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would apply to a bioluminescent pterodactyl as well. They'd still have silent P.
I need a
rim shot. I need to have a rim shot when I come up with those.
That's right. Now that was a great one, Trey. That's the best joke ever on Scary Show. No, it just is. I mean, it's silent T. Okay. You get the A+ for the night.
All right. Yeah.
All right. So there we go. So now, John, it's been interesting. This has been some really interesting stuff. Do you have anything else from the book you would like to mention to us? And this is about as creepy as it gets.
No, so the rest of the book, you know, other than the vampires, the mummies, and the werewolves, there's a few outliers. Like, I have a chapter in there, believe it or not, that alleges that Jack the Ripper made it to America and he tended bar in Benson, Arizona. Got a chapter on the Banshee of the Badlands. What else do I have? It's just I have a chapter on real life creatures from the Black Lagoon, you know, like real life gill men, not really like the lizard man, but like actual fish people. Got a chapter about Jesse James, and he had a ghost that would haunt him called the Phantom Rider. Got a chapter about a guy who could start fires with his mind, and got a chapter about a real invisible man. So it's, even though the book's got the subtitles of Vampires, Mummies, and Werewolves, there's other monsters in it too, and that's just kind of an example of the other spectral beings that I covered.
And all of these spectral beings were in newspaper articles, right?
Yeah. I guess technically there was a few that I got just from oral accounts, but they were either newspaper articles or the one about Jack the Ripper came from a Federal Writers Project article from like the 1930s when the reporters were just sent out there to interview the old timers. I've got chapters in there about Spring Hill Jack supposedly came to America you know, in the Wild West period, stuff like that. So,
now who is that? Spring Hill Jack?
Yeah, originated in London in like, gosh, when was he around? 1830. Yeah, he was just this weird humanoid who would leap and jump. He had a cape. He could breathe fire. He had quality, just wild stuff. But there were sightings of him in America as well. So it was really weird.
That's right. And he scared a lot of people, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, and they had a flap of sightings of like a similar being in New York for like maybe 40 years or more. Like from the 1880s until the 1920s, they would have these weird leaping humanoids that would appear like every decade. And so there's, you know, obviously a deeper story there. We just don't know what else there is to it.
Well, now, you just mentioned something that's very interesting. You said these leaping humanoids, did they leap maybe up to 30 feet?
I don't remember what their records were, but they, I mean, but yeah, they were definitely known for their leaps and bounds.
The reason is in Tabor City, the Sydney Monsters, it is a legend that they could leap 20 to 30 feet.
Oh, cool.
Were
they humanoid looking? What did they look like?
They were kind of hairy all over, kind of like Bigfoot.
Hmm.
Why?
Well, I was just curious that they'd kind of fit that Spring Hill Jack mold. You know, he wasn't really hairy, though.
Well, he just looked really weird. I saw a drawing of him. He looked crazy.
Yeah.
Terrifying, actually. And it's like,
yeah,
do what?
Oh, I said he was even seen here in New Mexico in the 1930s in Silver City, of all places.
In Silver City?
Yeah, which is another Billy the Kid town. Billy the Kid lived in Silver City when he was real young, so.
I tell you what, there's no telling. Things were crazy back then, and it's probably good that we've moved forward in time, and some of these crazy things don't seem to be popping up like they used to. I'm serious. We don't need that. So anyway, that's so very interesting. Okay, I'm gonna ask everybody to have a question or a comment of John LeMay, and we're gonna start with the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, Dr. Trey Dunaway. Do you have a comment or a question for John?
John, about skinwalkers. How widespread are skinwalkers? Now, other than the Arizona Skinwalker Ranger, I mean, is it a worldwide phenomenon, or is it located to a smaller number of places? I don't hear about skinwalkers that much.
So, under different names, kind of, sort of, I believe they have, like, this sounds comical, but they have were otters, like, in Alaska, like, people that turn into otters, and they're similar to the skinwalker in that I think they have to wear the animal pelt to do it. So I would say anywhere that you have, like, Native Americans, tribal people, I'm sure there's probably similar beliefs, like in the jungles of Thailand, and I just don't know the names or can't recall them, but I think just the idea of wearing an animal skin and turning into that animal is pretty widespread. And actually, in fact, that's really the truth of the werewolf legend. Even in old Europe, typically it wasn't like you'd get bit by the werewolf and you'd turn into one. It was almost always you would wear the magical animal pelt to do the transformation. So, it's really not how it appears in the movies.
When you mention that, I think of the Silkies in Ireland and Scotland. Where it's they're seals, and I can't remember the exact details of those legends, but it's seals that will take usually men, seduce them and bring them into the ocean, and they turn into silkies, which are seals.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've heard
I guess that
too.
Would be kind of a skinwalker-type legend when you mention the skins.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. That's a great question. Great comments from John LeMay. Devin Tate, what have you got for John LeMay? And then John Mark will close us up. So, Devin, question or comment for John LeMay?
Yeah, well, thank you. It's been really interesting. I think I've heard of skinwalkers before, but I didn't know very much about them, and now I'm very intrigued. But I was also looking up, like, werewolves and cryptids in Kansas, where I'm from, and I haven't heard of this one, but apparently there's something known as a hellhound that has, like, it's like a black big dog, like a Great Dane, but their eyes glow, and they leave behind a foul odor. So it sounds like other cryptids that, you know, we know about, but have you ever come across stories about the hellhounds?
Oh, yeah, I love stories about hellhounds. I've got one chapter on hellhounds in the Cowboys and Monsters book, too. They were seen around El Dorado Canyon in Nevada. It's a really cool Old West story where the El Dorado Canyon, they found, like, these major gold strikes, and the miners would chain up these dogs at the side of their mines to guard them in the night. And something happened where all the miners left. And I think a lot of them left their dogs to starve and die instead of just taking them with them. And so that's why there's like this huge hellhound legend in El Dorado, which they also call Hell Dorado, which is pretty cool. Southwest, yeah, they have the hellhounds of Hell Dorado, which is pretty cool. But what's even cooler, though, is in Mexico, they have kind of the opposite of hellhounds, like the counter the hellhounds. They have kind of more like these angelic dogs they call cadejos, I think. And they're called the white cadejos. So they're like I guess you wouldn't call it the good version of the hellhound, but they're like the opposite, which is kind of neat. So they're white dogs that will kind of help you out of tight spots.
Well, that's interesting. Cool.
Well, another great question. Thanks a lot, Devin. And Mark Johnston, what is your comment or question for John LeMay?
Well, for one, is your book available yet, and where can we get that? And second, is there any contemporary stories in the same area still going with the skinwalkers, or is that something that's more legend, or like Bigfoot, is it something that's ongoing, more evidence every year?
Oh, yeah. So to do the second question first, what's ironic about the skinwalkers is those stories are more contemporary than they are anything else. Like I can't find any good Old West skinwalker stories other than just the Navajo witch purge of 1878. So they're kind of like lizard man, just in the sense that they're more of a modern phenomenon. I mean, supposedly they go way, way back, but only now people are really talking about them. But yeah, in the book, it's available. Again, Cowboys and Monsters, just search for it on Amazon.
Cool. I'll pick it up, and I can't wait to read it.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be great. Well, great. Look, we had some great questions for John LeMay. John, it's always a pleasure to have you on here, and I'll see if we can get Matt Delf, when you come on next, to tell about his harrowing adventures at Land Between the Lakes, because he went there, and he'll tell us all about it. And it's great when we can share stories. I think it's very important. These legends they're legends for a reason. It's really exciting. So anyway, John, we want to thank you very much for being on the show tonight. Anybody can listen. If you didn't catch until the very end of it, you can listen to it. Just go to scarycastpodcast.com, and you can see all of our links on Facebook. So that's what we want you to do and listen to it. And we're going to be exploring a brand new radio station here in about 3 weeks that we're going to be carried on exclusively. So it's going to be really exciting, and I'll tell you more about it later in the coming weeks. So, John, thank you very much for your time and for being here and telling us these stories. They're just great. And we'll have Matt about Land Between the Lakes. I mean, because I know I'm not going to go up there. And Matt did, and we didn't get a chance to talk about it that much at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference, but he definitely has a story. And regarding the Hellhound, I have a friend that had one, and I believe him. His name's Kyle Peckham. He's one of the most solid people I know, and he had one follow and chase his car for a couple of miles out in the country, and it was outside of Charlotte. So I'll see if I can hook you two guys up. And he said he was afraid. He was really afraid. It was all he could do to speed and get away from it. So we'll see. So we got great stories, great legends, great books from John LeMay, and I want to thank everybody for being here on the one and only ScaryCast. We'll see you next week. We've got Walking Dead member and horror director Burnett. He will be here with us from Coleman, Alabama, and we'll also be talking a little bit about the Alabama Paracon, which is coming up, if I can remember correctly, July the 16th in Coleman, Alabama at Smith Lake Park, Pavilion number 8. So we'll see everybody next time on the one, the only, the amazing ScaryCast. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
Good night, Doug.
9 p.m.
Yeah, thank you. Good night. All right.
Good night.
Bonjour. Now the British lady won't talk to us. Oh. Well, skinwalkers must have gotten to her, so everybody can just hang up and the show will be over. So thanks a lot.